The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I'd like to start with a poem or an utterance that a fully enlightened monk has done at the time of the Buddha, who lived at the time of the Buddha. So it's recorded in the suttas, discourses, and goes part of the poem goes like this: strewn with garlands of the musk rose tree, these regions are so delightful, so lovely, echoing with the trumpeting of elephants. These rocky crags delight me. Glistening, they look like blue storm clouds, with waters cool and streams so clear, and covered all in ladybugs. These rocky crags delight me. Like the peak of a blue storm cloud, or like a fine bungalow, lovely, echoing with the trumpeting of elephants, these rocky crags delight me. The rain comes down on the lovely flats, in the mountains frequented by hermits, echoing with the cries of peacocks, these rocky crags delight me. That was the end. This utterance shows the delight of this monk Maha Kassapa for nature and for the natural world. And the natural world actually plays an important role in Buddhism, more than usually is being emphasized. For example, the Buddha was born under a tree. He attained awakening on the bank of a river under a tree, which was the well-known Bodhi tree with the heart-shaped leaves, which is a sacred tree in Buddhism. And the story goes that after his awakening, he spent the first 7 days under this tree. Then when he gave his first sermon after his awakening, this was in the deer park in the open air, just like many other sermons over the course of his life. He even died amongst the trees. So the Buddha lived with his monks and nuns close to nature, often not in a village, but on the edge of a village or in a grove or forest. And like in the poem I just shared, in more suttas, the nature is often mentioned as an inspiration, a delight. Like maybe it helped people to experience this calm and ease that we can have in nature, which are very helpful states of mind for meditation. And the Buddha encouraged, actually, his disciples, so also us, to meditate in nature. And in a few suttas, he says the following. He says, a practitioner gone to a wilderness or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut sits down cross-legged with their body straight and focuses their mindfulness right there. Just mindful, they breathe in. Mindful, they breathe out. So the Buddha instructs us to meditate in the wilderness, at the root of a tree, or in an empty hut. And this is very interesting to me, since in our day and age, we often sit inside in our climate-controlled spaces, away from the elements. But maybe nature has something to offer us that is harder to find when we sit inside. And I'll get back to that later in this talk. The Buddha also used many examples and metaphors from nature in his discourses. A well-known one is that the lotus flower is a metaphor for awakening, or a symbol for awakening. He also used, for example, a still lake for concentration, and a dewdrop to indicate how quickly a human life is over. It's like dewdrops disappear in the course of the morning. And a bowl of boiling and bubbling water for anger and ill will. So this all goes to show that the natural world was an integral part of the Buddha's teachings. And today I'd like to dive a little deeper into this topic of how the natural world can support meditation and which lessons we can learn from nature. So the natural world can be a support for meditation. And I think that might be one of the reasons that the Buddha encouraged us to meditate in nature. We might all have this experience that when we're in nature, it helps us to be free from this complexity of social life, at least when we're not like with a group of friends in nature or family. But if we're alone or maybe with one or two other people, we can attune to the natural rhythm of life, of nature. We can really see that there's a rhythm to nature. We can see the moon cycles, the sunrise and sunset, seasons that come and go, animals that mate and give birth and die. And plants have their own rhythm. Seeds fall to the ground and germinate, grow into plants, and wither and die again at some point. And often, I find at least that being in nature helps to calm down and to relax. It's like our nervous system is so attuned to nature that something inside of us seems to relax when we're in nature. And we are possibly also more connected to all of life, different life forms, small and large animals, like insects or fish or squirrels or whatever you see in nature. And the Buddha indicated, of course, that respecting all life, even the smallest insects, is important. And being in a natural world might help us to see that and to practice that as well. It can also be a practice of loving kindness or metta. Like with every animal we encounter, we might be able to do some metta. So nature can be a support in many ways, like to have some relaxation, some ease and calm. And we can attune to the natural rhythms that play out in nature. And we can be reminded to respect all life forms. Nature can also be our teacher. There are many, many lessons to learn from nature. And one that is really obvious, I think, is the teaching on anicca, or impermanence in English. And according to Gil Fronsdal, impermanence can be understood in three ways. And the deepest way of understanding impermanence is to understand it in a way that leads to awakening. And when we see impermanence in that way, we let go of all grasping for objects. And we gain insight into the nature, true nature of reality. So if that happens, then there's a letting go on the deepest level. Then the middle level is to understand impermanence through also a form of insight. For example, when we are deep in meditation, we might be able to see the moment by moment arising of experience and all the little moments that our life is built from and that is constantly changing. And then at the least deep level is the mundane understanding of impermanence, such as the passing of the seasons or the changeability of the weather, but also our moods might change from moment to moment or over the course of the day. So we cannot force the deepest or the second deepest understanding of impermanence to arise. There are things that just arise out of the right causes and conditions being present. But we can create those conditions for it to arise. And one of the ways to create those conditions is to start at the level of seeing the mundane, the everyday understanding of impermanence. So this everyday understanding of seeing our mood or the changing of the weather or the seasons can already give us some freedom. Sometimes when we see and know that things will disappear or change again, it might help us to relax a little bit, especially when it's unpleasant stuff. And it might help us to just be with something that might be unpleasant now, because we know it will be changing or be gone at some point again. And it might also even help us to be less attracted to pleasant stuff that's happening, since also pleasant things will change. And having a healthy sense of this change might actually be helpful because we're less attached to the pleasantness then, because at some point it will change. So it helps us to suffer less when these things change or disappear. And this mundane level of understanding can, of course, very clearly been seen in nature, in the natural world. Now, like right now, you might see the leaves fall in autumn, because we're in autumn. Or like from night to night, we can see the shape of the moon change. Or each day, the sun setting and the transition into the night. And we can see flowers bloom and wither, or hear the coming and going of a song that a bird is singing. The wind on our cheeks one moment, and then the next it might be gone. Etc., etc. There are so many examples in the natural world, and we can each discover examples for our own, of course. But seeing all this change in nature can help us to let go of our own inner landscapes as well. We can see that moods, emotions, thoughts come and go. It all changes all the time. We're never stuck with the same thought for the whole day. Usually it comes and goes, or different thoughts come and go. And we're usually also different emotions and moods come during the day, or during even over the course of an hour or so. And as human beings, we are actually part of nature, of course. We are not different or separate from it. Our bodies are built up from the water, the food, and the oxygen that we take in from our surroundings, from nature. So where does our body stop? Where does the outside world stop, begin? And when we eat a piece of cucumber, at what point is this piece of cucumber still a cucumber, and at what point is it part of our body? So if you start to look at it like this, you can see that we're all an integral part of the natural world. And that also, us ourselves, we are part of this changing process that we can observe in a natural world. And we can just observe this in our own bodies and minds as well. Our bodies are in constant flux. We move around, we digest food, we blink with our eyes, etc., etc. Our minds are in constant flux as well, with different thoughts, moods, emotions, like I already mentioned. And what can sometimes happen is this noticing this changeability of all things inside and outside, that it can lead to a sense of freedom, or it can inspire some non-attachment. Since everything changes, there is no point in holding on or getting attached to something. And if we get a sense of that, then letting go can happen. I'm in the Netherlands right now, where I'm originally from. And yesterday I was walking in the dunes here with a friend near the coast. And there was this very strong wind, with even stronger gusts of wind and scattered showers on top of that. So you might think maybe not a good time to go for a walk, but we just went anyways. So we could see the showers coming in and dark clouds approaching, and several rainbows, because in between the dark clouds and the rain, the sun was shining. And it was actually very beautiful, with the sun illuminating the dunes against the dark sky and rainbows. But at times it was actually really unpleasant, because the strong wind was just, you know, slapping the raindrops in our face every once in a while, that kind of thing. And, you know, I knew these showers would all be short, with like little short showers and nothing that would last for hours. And also this walk wouldn't last for hours anyways. So I could see that the impermanence was there, just in nature, like the impermanence of the rain and the wind. Realized that this was just a transient experience that would be over soon. And soon I'll be in a warm and wind-free and dry place again. And this actually helped me to just be with what was happening. Just seeing it as an opportunity to be mindful. Maybe mindful of the unpleasantness, of the rain and the wind. But that doesn't matter. Like, the mindfulness actually helped me to really tune into this unpleasantness. And because I was allowing the unpleasantness, the experience became a bit more neutral. So sometimes being aware of this impermanence can help us to regain the mindfulness and help us to open to the unpleasantness that might arise. And then it can, an unwholesome experience of aversion, like I had with the wind and the rain, might turn into something beneficial, like mindfulness and letting go. But sometimes reflecting on impermanence doesn't lead to this sense of freedom and non-attachment. It can sometimes lead to fear or depression as well. And that can happen because there might be some attachment to a sense of stability, a sense of things going the way we want them to go. So if we do experience some fear or depression when we work with this teaching on anicca or on impermanence, then we can take a look at this attachment. We can see what's actually going on here. Is there some attachment? Investigate that a little bit. What are we afraid of? Or what kind of things need to be stable right now? Is it okay if things change or not? And that might help us to gain some more insight into our minds. And what I sometimes find is that the mere realization of being attached to something, like, oh wait, I feel attached to this. I feel attached to not having rain in my face, for example, might already be an eye-opener and might already help to let go of this attachment. But sometimes this investigation might not help and make things only worse. And then it's best to just let go of it for a while. Let go of this whole teaching on anicca, on impermanence. And just focus on whatever we're used to in our meditation. And maybe come back to it at a later point in our practice and try it out again and see what happens. And if necessary, let go of it again. And Gil Fronsdal again, he says, Buddhism could be seen as one extended meditation on transience as a means to freedom. So what he's saying, impermanence or transience has the potential to awaken us. And it's actually such an important aspect of the Buddha's teachings that the Buddha's last words before he died were, all conditioned things are impermanent. Strive on with diligence. So apparently the teaching on impermanence was so important to the Buddha that he decided to offer the teaching as his last words. And another lesson that the natural world can teach us is to just be. I remember I was on retreat once at the IMS in Massachusetts. And around the retreat center there's this forest. And one time I was feeling upset over something. I don't really remember what it was about, but I decided to go for a walk in the forest. And after a while of walking around upset, I suddenly realized that the trees weren't upset. They just were, just present for whatever was happening. The wind, the sun, ants crawling on their bark, or a woodpecker picking up some insects from its trunk, etc. The trees just stood there, equanimous and balanced, no signs of upsetness. And this somehow calms me down too. Like, oh, I can just be present. Kind of relaxation. And yesterday during my walk in the wind and the rain and the sun, I could see that conditions were just the way they are. And if we fight against them or are aversive or cling to certain conditions, then we suffer. And when we can be with the conditions just the way they are, like be with the wind and the rain or the sun or whatever it is, we are not in contention or disagreement with reality. And that is a real skill, this being with what is. It's a skill that is really valuable in our lives. We all regularly, probably multiple times a day, encounter situations or conditions that we don't like or that we want to be different, but that we can change. It might be the weather in my case, or maybe a boss demanding something, or might be something else. Someone cuts you off in traffic. And if we can then just be with what is, just as it is, then we will suffer less. just like that mountain in the meditation. It's not going to complain about a storm. It's just going to let it pass. And this is truly a skill. It's not something that we can grow overnight, but it's something we can train. And if you want to train it, it might be good to start with something small, something that bothers you, something tiny, like maybe a stoplight that turns yellow right in front of you, or a piece of junk mail in your mailbox that you are irritated about. And we can also use nature to help us with this skill. And we can just reflect on the trees and the flowers, the animals around us, and realize that they just are. And they are in general not demanding anything to be different than it is. And they just stand there or be there, accepting the conditions as they are. And then a third lesson that we can learn from nature is that everything is just nature. And this is something that Sayadaw Utteswaraya often emphasizes. He says, everything is experience. Whatever is happening through cause and effect. They do their job, we do their job, our job. Just recognize what is happening. Everything is nature. End quote. And there are two ways, or maybe more, but two ways I can see to look at this everything is nature part that Tejaniya teaches about. And the first is that it is the nature of things to be the way they are. Like Tejaniya says in the quote, they do their job, we do ours. And what he means by that is that, for example, anger and desire are just doing their job. And we didn't ask for anger or desire to arise, but because of causes and conditions, they have arisen and just doing their job. They're just doing what they are designed to do. And just being angry or just being desirous. And then at some point they will pass away. They will go again. And our job is to just be mindful of them. That's our job. And so the second way that we can look at everything as nature is that we as human beings are part of the natural world. And what I was mentioning, our bodies are made out of the same elements that the rest of the world is made out of. Our minds are just natural processes as well. So everything is just nature. Things happen because of causes and conditions. It's their nature to happen. And our bodies and minds are part of the natural world. And this lesson of everything is just nature can help us to let go as well. We can see that processes like aversion, anger, sadness, but also joy, peace, and happiness are just nature. And this way we don't have to push them away out of aversion or cling to them out of desire. And if we stop with the pushing and we stop with the clinging, then we actually experience peace. And we suffer less and less. The less we push and the less we cling, the less we suffer as well. Then a fourth lesson is inspired by the Thai forest monks. And they have this practice where they go into nature to face their fears. And in Thailand, there are many dangerous animals in the forest. So meditating there by yourself might be very scary. And facing these fears can be, yeah, cathartic. It can help to purify the mind if indeed we manage to overcome those fears in that moment. Now, I'm not saying that we should do something that is dangerous to help purify our mind, but maybe these Thai forest monks can inspire us to face our fears when they arise naturally. Like, I once went on a walk in Yosemite to a viewpoint where you could see the sunset over the valley, but in order to get there, you had to walk through the forest. So by the time you watch the sunset, you know, the light starts to diminish. So you have to walk back in the dark, basically, or partly in the dark. So this was something that was a little bit exciting, I thought, to say the least. So I took the opportunity to, you know, face my fears in that moment and feel how unpleasant it is to be afraid of, you know, the dark around and maybe animals or whatnot. And luckily, I arrived safely back at the car in that time. So So nature can be a support for meditation. Like I mentioned in the beginning of this talk, it can be a source of relaxing, calming. And most of the time it's not as scary because we usually don't go out in the dark in the forest. But it usually helps to calm us down when we're in nature. And also, nature shows us natural rhythms like the seasons and birth and death. And through being in nature, we can get a renewed sense of respect for all life forms. And nature can also be a teacher. We can clearly see the teaching of impermanence in nature. Nature can teach us how to just be with whatever arises. And we can start realizing that everything is just nature, like Teishaniya teaches. And lastly, nature can challenge us to face our fears. So my invitation is to let the natural world be your support and your teacher. We can see nature all around us, in the trees, down the street, our house plants, our pets, birds, ants, squirrels, even in the food we eat, and of course also in ourselves and our fellow human beings. We're all part of nature. And going out into nature can help us to appreciate these lessons of nature even more. And we might discover more lessons or supports that nature offers us. Because what I offered here is just the tip of the iceberg, of course. And we can even start a nature meditation practice, like the Buddha encouraged us to do in that quote that I gave at the beginning, to sit at the root of a tree, for example. And we could make it a regular practice to meditate in our backyard or on our balcony, or even just in front of a houseplant, you know, if we don't have a balcony or a yard. Or we might go out into a nature park and spend some time meditating there at the root of a tree, or on a rock, or at the beach, or where I live in Richmond, Virginia, on the river. You can, you know, whatever is available in your area. Then immersing ourselves in nature and then meditating there can be a powerful experience. Very worthwhile to check it out if you haven't yet, to what it's like to meditate in nature. Because when we are in nature, we also tend to use our senses more. We can become more aware of all the sounds. And sometimes when we sit with our eyes open or when we do walking meditation, lots of sights happening. And also the smells of the earth, the plants and the flowers. And the beautiful thing is that we feel the wind touch our face or our skin wherever it's bare. And we can feel the rain or the sun on our skin, etc. Our senses are more open in nature, or there's more happening. So maybe this is an inspiration for you to try it out for yourself, if you haven't yet. And I'll end with a quote from Gilgan. He says, "When we live disconnected from nature, it is hard to remember the intimate connection between our life and the health of the natural world. When we spend time in nature, it is easier to understand how they work together. If we take up the Buddha's teachings and our instruction to meditate at the foot of a tree, perhaps our appreciation of the natural world will grow, and perhaps sitting in nature will show us the natural world that is within each of us."